This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Hayes Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Libya's UN-backed leader Fayez al-Sarraj was in Brussels yesterday for talks with the EU, and the president of the European Council, Donald Tusk, said he is committed to closing the migration route between Libya and Italy after those talks. He said he was going to propose concrete operational measures to close the migrant route at a meeting of EU leaders in Malta, which takes place on Friday.
From Rome, that's reporter Josephine McKenna. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, leading Congolese opposition figure Etienne Tshisekedi died yesterday in Brussels of an undisclosed illness. And the charismatic Zimbabwean pastor Evan Mawariri is facing up to 20 years in prison after being charged with subversion.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, leading Congolese opposition figure Etienne Tshisekedi died yesterday in Brussels of an undisclosed illness, bringing to an end a political career which spanned six tumultuous decades. His passing comes at a crucial time for the opposition as it fights to dislodge President Joseph Kabila. From Kinshasa, William Klaus has the story.
Etienne Tshisekedi founded the UDPS, the DRC's oldest and largest opposition party, in 1982 to fight the dictatorial regime of Mobutu Sese Seko. He had broken with his former boss and would remain the country's most prominent opposition politician for the rest of his life. He battled Mobutu's successors, first Laurent Kabila and then his son Joseph, despite his poor health later on in life. He boycotted the DRC's first multi-party elections in four decades in 2006 and then ran and lost in 2011, although he said the polls were rigged and declared himself the rightful winner. On October 4th, Etienne Tshisekedi addressed his supporters in person for the final time. The 84-year-old was visibly frail. His speech lasted only several minutes, yet was received rapturously.
La carte jaune signifie...
Tshisekedi told his supporters that they would soon show President Kabila a red card and remove him from power. Tshisekedi had returned to the country from Brussels in July of last year to lead the charge against Joseph Kabila, who, having served his constitutional limit of two terms in office, was due to step down in December. But elections were delayed. Shisekedi's passing leaves the opposition at a crucial impasse. VOA spoke to Albert Meleka, Tshisekedi's former chief of staff, who said that no other individual can match Tshisekedi's charisma or capacity to mobilize the Congolese population for a struggle. Meleka believes, however, that the Rassemblement Coalition and the UDPS have people capable of coordinating the different trends and ambitions within the movements. If they fail, Meleka says, the danger of breaking up is always there. Last year saw violent, deadly protests against Kabila. On New Year's Eve, the Rassemblement signed a deal with the ruling alliance to hold elections this year. The agreement leaves Kabila in office for the interim. Tshisekedi, as president of the Rassemblement, was to lead the monitoring committee tasked with applying the deal.
Je suis sûr que pour certains...
His former chief of staff, Meleka, says for some in the president's alliance, Tshisekedi's death will be like a weight lifted from their backs, since he was the central element of the agreement and the person who frightened them. Talking to local media, a government spokesman offered his condolences to Shisekedi's family and political party. Late Wednesday and early Thursday, as news of Shisekedi's death spread, police fired tear gas to disperse supporters trying to gather outside his home in the Limite district of the capital. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
We With the support of Libya's UN-backed leader Fayez al-Sarraj in Brussels, European Council President Donald Tusk said he would propose extra and operational measures to stop the migrant route from Libya to Italy at the meeting of European Union leaders in Malta on Friday. Tomorrow's meeting will include 28 EU heads of state. They'll address the external politics of migration. They are expected to focus their discussions on the central Mediterranean route and Libya. Josephine McKenna is following developments on the upcoming meeting and spoke with me about what the new measures would mean for refugees and migrants who want to head to Europe through Libya.
Libya's UN-backed leader, Fayez al-Sarraj, was in Brussels yesterday for talks with the EU, and the president of the European Council, Donald Tusk, said he is committed to closing the migration route between Libya and Italy after those talks. He said he was going to propose concrete operational measures to close the migrant route at a meeting of EU leaders in Malta, which takes place on Friday. He said he's had talks with the Italian Prime Minister, Paolo Gentiloni, and it seems that they want to work together to really reduce the number of migrants making that journey across the Mediterranean. Mr. Tusk said that the flow was not sustainable either for the EU or for Libya, and the traffickers, the people traffickers, were undermining the authority of the Libyan state for their own personal profit.
How do they hope to achieve doing this?
Well, it seems like a tall order at the moment, but the 28 heads of state, the EU government leaders, will be meeting to discuss migration in Malta on Friday, and they're expected to particularly focus on the central Mediterranean route and Libya, looking at measures to support the government to increase security, trying to find ways to cut that flow. It seems like a tall order, but just this week we saw the Italian government announce €200 million to invest in countries including in Niger and Libya to try and support the security services and to cut the numbers of people who are trying to make that journey across the Mediterranean.
So does that actually mean that refugees and migrants will not be able to leave to go into Europe or Italy?
It seems a little bit unclear at the moment, but there's talk of training for security services, more training for the Coast Guard in Libya, trying to break the business model of smugglers. That sounds a bit vague at the moment, but they really need to come up with more specific proposals if they're really going to reduce the numbers of people making this journey. 180,000 people have arrived initially last year, and there's no sign of that number slowing down at this point. So it seems that Italy at least wants to invest more money in the home countries to try and support the economies and give people a reason to stay, while also trying to support the security services and coastal patrols off the coast of Libya.
Also, there was a survey that was conducted in Italy regarding female migrants that found that many of them were victims of genital mutilation. Can you tell me more about that survey?
That seems quite an unusual survey. It's a very rare thing for that to be done in Italy. This was a survey conducted by a Milan university, the Università degli Studi, and they estimate between 46,000 and 57,000 female migrants may be victims of genital mutilation. The survey estimates around 60% of those would be coming from Nigeria and Egypt, but women from Somalia and Burkina Faso were also cited as victims in this particular survey.
What do they intend on doing at this point?
The results of the survey were presented at a meeting organized by something called the Action Aid Organization in conjunction with the City of Milan ahead of the World Day Against Female Genital Mutilation, which is due to take place on February the 6th. So at this point, the survey is trying to highlight the issue, the concern about women's safety, women's health, and try and promote this in accordance with international publicity that we hope we're going to see next week. We see the world recognition of that day.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
The new U.S. travel ban has gotten a mixed reaction in Europe. blasted by many mainstream leaders, but embraced by far-right parties that are surging in the polls ahead of key elections in Germany, the Netherlands and France. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Le problème de l'immigration de masse, qui avec la complicité de l'Union européenne devient jour après jour.
France's far-right candidate Marine Le Pen is polling strongly ahead of April presidential elections on promises to close this country's borders and drastically limit immigration. She's an enthusiastic supporter of President Donald Trump. Perhaps not surprisingly, a senior member of her National Front party responded to the new U.S. travel ban by saying it might not be a bad idea for France. Le Pen's campaign manager, David Rachelin, was a bit more nuanced Wednesday. He told French radio that a similar ban on immigrants from select Muslim countries was possible, but it wasn't the FN's top priority. In the Netherlands, which faces its own elections in March, popular far-right candidate Geert Wilders congratulated Trump on his executive order. "Well done, POTUS," he tweeted. "It's the only way to stay safe and free." Populist parties in Germany and Italy are also travel ban supporters. Washington says the temporary ban targeting seven nations aims to give U.S. officials time to set up stronger screening procedures against potential terrorists. While some Eastern European countries are also worried about Muslim immigrants, although most have very few, experts say Western Europe faces a different set of security concerns.
The questions are often more about integration as much as they are about immigration.
Ian Bond is Director for Foreign Policy at the London-based Centre for European Reform.
Often the problem that you see is of sort of second-generation children of immigrants who still don't feel that they belong in the countries where they live.
Those second-generation Europeans authored the terrorist attacks in Paris and Brussels, for example, essentially against their own homelands. Practically speaking, says far-right expert Jean-Yves Camus, a travel ban would also be unworkable in places like France, with a large North African population that travels back and forth to their homeland.
I think that the majority of all citizens want stricter rules on immigration, but they think that the national front is going too far.
The U.S. ban has also sparked some soul-searching in the European Union, where the recent flood of asylum seekers led to rising border walls and a controversial deal to send some Syrians back to Turkey. Europe said Italy's foreign minister, Angelino Alfano, is not in a good position to give opinions about the choices of others. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
New UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said yesterday that the organization is working to avoid the worst for South Sudan. He also praised the international and regional cooperation that prevented large-scale violence in the Gambia during its recent post-election crisis. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Antonio Guterres spoke to reporters at the UN after his return from the African Union summit in Ethiopia. The new UN chief said the situation in conflict-torn South Sudan is dramatic and could worsen. Guterres said it was agreed at a meeting involving himself, leaders of the AU, and East African bloc IGAD that they would cooperate to make sure South Sudan's national dialogue is genuinely inclusive going forward. He also met with South Sudan's president.
In a meeting with Salva Kiir, it was agreed that we will have better cooperation, both for the UN mission to operate more freely inside South Sudan and for the regional protection force to be put in place.
African nations have proposed deploying 4,000 troops to South Sudan to help stabilize the country, where 3 years of conflict have displaced more than 2 million people. Guterres said it was agreed that Kenya would contribute troops to that force. Turning to the recent post-election crisis in Gambia, where President Yahya Jammeh initially refused to step down in favor of his democratically elected opponent, Adama Barrow, Guterres said the episode demonstrated what is possible when there is regional unity.
It is possible for action to be taken, and it is possible for democracy, human rights, and the freedom of peoples to be defended. When there is division in the region, it is much more difficult for the UN to be able to act accordingly.
Guterres said the narrative about Africa must not be based on the crises, but on the continent's potential. He said Africa has grown economically and has great success stories that must be built on to achieve widespread and inclusive sustainable development. Guterres said that is the best way to prevent further conflicts. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Huhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Leading Congolese opposition figure, Yeteni Tshisekedi, died yesterday in Brussels of an undisclosed illness. Blasted by many mainstream leaders on one hand and embraced by far-right parties on the other, the new U.S. travel ban has gotten mixed reaction in Europe. And the new U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres has praised the international and regional cooperation that prevented large-scale violence in the Gambia. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In Zimbabwe, the charismatic pastor Eben Mawarire is facing up to 20 years in prison. This after being charged with subversion for his part in organizing protests in New York City against President Robert Mugabe. The pastor fled Zimbabwe in July, saying he feared for the security of his family. He had been charged with inciting violence last year before leaving Zimbabwe, but those charges were dropped. It is not clear why Mawarire returned to Zimbabwe. He is also accused of using social media to incite violence. His hashtag #ThisFlagProtest movement last year turned into one of the largest street protests against Mr. Mugabe. Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Southern Africa calls the charges against Mawarire absolutely ridiculous and a total sham.
As Kenya joins the rest of the world in marking the World Cancer Day on Saturday, February 4th, experts are calling for increased funding to address the disease burden. In Kenya, about 40,000 cases of cancer are reported every year, while some 28,000 people die of the disease in the same period. From Nairobi, reporter Ruben Chama has the story.
For Mary Waithera, a 30-year-old mother of three, days have turned into weeks and months since receiving the heartbreaking news last year that Kevin, her second-born son, had been diagnosed with brain cancer. She is devastated and the fatigue is evident on her face.
It started with a severe headache. He would go to school, then the teachers would send him home due to headache. We took him to Olkalau Hospital for medical checkup. The medics there said they could not detect anything. They said the boy was not sick. So they just gave us painkillers and medicine for typhoid, malaria and amoeba. Then we went back home.
After 3 days, the boy became seriously ill, and they decided to take him to another hospital where doctors confirmed that the boy had brain tumor associated with cancer.
Doctor sasa akatuma mwenzake akaniambia akuja niita alikuwa anaitwa Dr. Keliu Kerubo ndiye alimtuma akakuja akaniita hapo ije tukaenda akaanza kuniongelesha akaniambia mtoto wako na cancer.
Another doctor called me. She was called Dr. Kerubo. She told me that he was suffering from cancer and we now want to get you an ambulance to rush him to Kenyatta National Hospital.
Akaniambia sasa tunataka tukusaidie uchukue ambulance tukupeleke Kenyatta.
Mary's story captures the suffering that our little boy and other young cancer patients endure each day as the disease continues to take a heavy toll on the lives of both the young and old. Kenyan officials and health campaigners say that the increase in the number of people, among them children, suffering from cancer-related ailments has put a heavy strain on the East African nation's healthcare system. In Kenya, cancer is the third leading killer disease after cardiovascular and infectious diseases. Dr. Catherine Nyongesa is a lead oncologist at Texas Cancer Center, a Nairobi-based private facility providing treatment and care to cancer patients. She also works at the country's main referral hospital, Kenyatta National Hospital. She calls the statistics depressingly alarming.
When you look at the women, we see that majority of the cancers, number one is breast, which is in tandem with global statistics that breast cancer leads in most women. So we are seeing it also in Kenya. And then this is followed by cervical cancer. Third on line is the throat cancers as the colon cancers. When we look at men, we still see prostate cancer as number one. This is followed by throat cancer, and then the others like the cancers of the digestive system.
Nyongesa laments that due to lack of awareness, most of the reported cases of cancer are detected in the late stages of the illness, resulting in death.
For children, we see mainly the cancers of the brain tumors, the cancers of the kidney tumors, cancers of the eye, retinoblastoma, and leukemias. When we look at our country, if we diagnose 40,000 new cancer cases per year, we see we lose about 28,000. So majority of these patients are dying of cancer because it's being picked up late.
Deborah Modi is the executive director of the Kenya Cancer Association, a Nairobi-based non-profit organization that seeks to raise cancer awareness. She says cases of childhood cancer are on the rise, unlike in the past, when cancer was considered a disease of the old.
I think childhood cancer has increased over the years, going by the number of children that we come across that have cancer. Recently, we came across a 16-year-old girl who is suffering from breast cancer, which was not the norm before. Previously, children most of the time just had leukemia, the blood and bone marrow cancers. But now children are getting all types of cancers, bone marrow cancer, brain cancer, and so on. I think something needs to be done, some research, to determine why children are also very affected by cancer.
While early diagnosis and adequate treatment would reduce mortality rates, the cost of treatment is expensive. 1 in 10 children survive cancer in Kenya compared to 7 in 10 in the developed world, according to the Kenya Network of Cancer Organizations. Some of the common cases among young survivors include leukemia, a cancer of the blood cells, lymphoma, and brain tumor. No one knows for sure the reason for the increasing numbers of people detected with cancers in Kenya, but Dr. Nyongesa says it could be due to smoking as well as due to improved medical detection of the illness. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And Our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.